Today is April 21st, 2010. I'm Sherry Bowers, Local History Coordinator of the Milan Berlin Township Public Library, and I'm sitting here with Steve Rockwell, former trustee of the Milan Berlin Township Public Library, and we're going to talk about his work here in Milan, what he does, and I'm going to refer first to the picture that was taken by Larry Lambert 20 years ago and where you're at. So, Steve, if you'd talk a little bit about the picture.
Well, this was just a typical day here in Milan Cemetery when I ran a cemetery for, I ran it for 7 years, almost 8 years. And it was a nice place to work. It was beautiful. It's one of the most beautiful cemeteries I think there is around. We have this nature area with it, but it was just a good place to work. And unfortunately, when you have to deal with people that are coming in at that time to see you, it's not always that pleasant. But other than those experiences, and I had a lot of friends that I came in there, but it was a rewarding job. It was nice to talk to all the people that they used to go for walks through there, and a lot of public relations work. It was fun.
You know, you're right about the cemetery. It is a very pretty cemetery, and of course, the Galpin Sanctuary is close by as well, and that's a nice area. The cemetery has some unique stories and monuments. I know that there's always local folklore, and mm-hmm. one of the stories I've heard about is as part of the cemetery being haunted. And can you share one of the stories about the cemetery?
Well, there's the Abbot's Tomb, which was one of the local haunts where everybody naturally during Halloween would come around. It was a family that originally lived out on the Mason Road area that their children, to the best of my knowledge, their children were buried in the tomb that's in the hillside there by the old pond. And then also there's the Glowing Cross, which is over on the far side of the cemetery. When at night, especially when there's no leaves on the tree, if you go over on the far side of Edison Park on East Street and look across, there's the mercury vapor light that's in Edison Park reflects on the cross, so it does look like it glows. Mm-hmm. It was kind of funny, a little story about, I looked out there one time and I could see somebody messing around out there. It was dark out, and I happened to sneak out of the house. Well, there was a bunch of kids out there, and they took off when they heard me coming. And when I got up to the area where the glowing cross was, here they had put blankets over all the crosses so they could try to figure out exactly which one was the glowing cross. Mm-hmm. And I waited for them to come back because I think that was Mom and Dad's good blankets. Mm-hmm. And they never came back, so I ended up with like 3 or 4 really nice blankets that I'm sure the parents were going to miss. So, mm-hmm. But and then Abbott's, we used to, when I worked there, I was always a tradition because being who I am, you know, they always said, you know, Rocky, you got to have a Halloween party because you're in the cemetery. So we had, in Halloween, I would throw a party and we would, everybody would dress up, and they would dress up really with great costumes. Well, one night we just happened to be outside and we were just standing around talking and that, and we see a carload of kids come in and they're heading back to Abbott's tomb. Mm-hmm. So I told everybody, I said, just let's kind of sneak back there. We'll kind of scare them. But whatever you do, don't get in front of the car. So we kind of snuck up on them. And the next thing you know, we're beside the car and they didn't know it. And everybody started looking in the windows and the poor kids were scared to death. They put their heads down in the car and started screaming. They wouldn't even move. And then all of a sudden they took off. But that was some of the fun times out there. And the kids, you know, growing up there, the kids, you know, everybody thinks that you're afraid when you're in a cemetery, but it was, you know, it was just a normal place to live. And, mm-hmm. well, there was some things that were kind of different that you couldn't explain, but mm-hmm. other than that, it was really, the kids really enjoyed it because of the nature area, you mm-hmm. know, so. But.
Well, I see a lot of people still walking, you know, walk through the cemetery and look at some of the monuments out there, as well as, you know, go over to the Galpin Sanctuary. The other thing that I know Well, that's interesting. I understand that the Heron Institute at one time was there.
Right.
And there's a rock there that explains kind of where it was at, which is interesting. Do you know the Heron Institute? Well, the cemetery's been there for a while. I find it curious that the Heron Institute was there in the cemetery area.
Yeah, I don't understand. I really don't know why that was like that. But the cemetery was established 1851, and some of the graves in that were moved from up by where the elementary school is. That's what I've been told.
Mm-hmm.
But if you look up in that area, if you look at the trees are kind of in a circle, and inside of that is where the Heron Institute was. And then I believe Reverend Judson lived across the street there, where Braddock's live now, and he was in charge of it. But you probably know more about that than me.
Well, I've learned a few things through through the year, last couple of years that I've been here, and I know that there's been some interest exactly where it was laid out, exactly looking at, I know a couple of people, Tom Real included, were looking at kind of where the foundation is, because wondering if there's still some remnants of the foundation where the Heron Institute lies, because I think there was some questions that maybe it was a little bit farther one way or the other, but I don't know whatever came of that.
Yeah.
But that was a kind of a magnificent building, and it's hard to believe that it was there.
It's too bad that they tore it down. Mm-hmm. Just think what that would be. That would be such an addition. That would be a museum by itself.
Yeah, but a really interesting, imposing building. So, again, you said you worked there how long at the cemetery?
I worked there from 85 to the first part of 93.
Okay. And then after that, what did you do after that?
I started with the Village of Milan.
Okay.
I also worked for the Berlin-Milan school system, too, but I worked for them part-time, and then I went to work for the Village as a lineman electrician, and I've been there ever since, from 93 to the present. And that's been a good job. It's nice to, I mean, everybody in town, you know, I've been here my whole life. Mm-hmm. And my father was a mayor from 62 to 75. I've been pretty well, Rockwell's been pretty well established around here for a lot of years.
I had an interview about a month ago with Mayor Bickley, and he spoke of your father, and a lot of people, Larry Russell included, a lot of people spoke very highly of your father, and Mayor Bickley talked about how you, in the Village, how you always managed to get things done, and spoke very fondly of your father, saying, you know, if there's something that needed to be done, you know, would delegate, you know, that task to that person.
Mm-hmm.
So, are there some stories you could share about your father that you can remember as mayor? Because, you know, I think a lot of people, at least in recent years, I'm not from Milan, but I know I think of Milan and Mayor Bickley.
Right.
But certainly, once you get to know this area and know that your father had an impact on it, what kinds of things can you share about your dad that you?
Well, he was quite a concerned person for Milan. You know, this was his hometown, and he'd been here his whole life. And I can remember back before they had, you know, like all the bookkeepers and stuff that they have now. That I can remember him spreading out all the mayor's court stuff all over the dining or the living room floor, and spending like all day Sunday doing all the records that he needed to do for mayor's court. And then if there was, when the garbage pickup went on, if somebody didn't get their garbage pickup, I can remember going with him in our old pickup truck, and we went and got the garbage and picked it up for him and took it to the local dump that was outside of town here. And when storms were, you know, had passed through, he was always one of the first ones out there. And he would always take me along with him, and him and I would go out and pull brush out of the street, and you know, naturally the street department would be out too, but we were, you know, always kind of the people on call.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you got right out there and made sure that the streets were picked up and limbs were out of the way. But that's some of the fond memories I have him as the mayor. He always never hesitated. Mm-hmm. If there was a job that he knew had to be done, like you mentioned, he would either make sure somebody did it or he got out and did it. So, but it was pretty rewarding. I mean, like I said, it was neat to go out, because I thought it was neat just to go out and help like that. And but it was a good job, and he enjoyed it. I think that he probably would have stayed mayor a little longer, but he retired from General Motors, and he just thought that was a good time to retire from mayor too. Mm-hmm. So
he was busy. So as not only acting as mayor, but having a job and of course a family and
right. Yeah, at that time he was the mayor. He worked at New Departure, and he was also a major in the Air Force. So he was he had to go to reserve meetings. He was between reserve and active duty. He served 27 years, and he started out as the Army Air Force, and then went to the Air Force.
Okay.
And he, like I said, he retired at the rank of major. Yeah, he was a B-17 flight instructor. They made him stay here instead of going overseas, and he taught pilots how to fly B-17s. If you're familiar with that, it was at what they call the Flying Fortress, which was a large
yes.
four-engine bomber that they used in World War II. So he logged, I believe he has two or three thousand hours of flying time, from biplanes to multi-engine bombers. So.
Oh, that's interesting. So I didn't know about him.
Yeah.
So your dad would have, during World War II, he stayed over here because he was a flight instructor rather than going...
Right, going overseas.
Okay.
But that was pretty neat. When I was a kid, he took me on a vacation one time, just him and me, and he said, let's go down to an old... air base that I was at, and I said, where is it? And he said, it's down in Mississippi. And so we're driving down these country roads, and the next thing you know, we go through this old farm path, it looks like, and here's an old air base with all the shells from, the shells of the planes from B-25s and B-24s, and the old barracks were there, and it was pretty cool.
That would be interesting.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of those stories, and we all talk about the World War II generation. I mean, there's so much hidden that we still don't know that they, every so often they'll share, or, just because you've heard it from, a son or daughter of that generation.
Yeah.
So it's interesting to hear about that. Did you ever have an interest in maybe learning how to fly, Steve?
I did, yeah. But it got to be, it was such a... to really get into good flying, it was quite a complex deal. I was around the time for Vietnam. I didn't get drafted for it, but I wanted to be a chopper pilot.
Mm-hmm.
And when I went to see the recruiter, he said, well, Vietnam's kind of winding down right now. He said, and I've got quite a few chopper pilots. He said, you probably couldn't get in that program. Well, I was kind of discouraged about that and never pursued it then after that, but I thought it would have been a cool thing to do, because
mm-hmm.
my dad did it naturally, but that I was proud of him for serving, mm-hmm. And doing all he did.
So he lived here all his life, and what about your mom? Was she from this area too?
She was originally from Minneapolis.
Okay.
I'm not sure exactly. I think that he happened to be in that area and met her, and next thing you know, they got married. So they were married for quite a few years, and then they decided that marriage wasn't the right thing then. So, but it was a good life.
Mm-hmm. Share some stories about growing up here, because of course you would have graduated from Milan High School before the merger, correct?
Well, actually, the merger was, the official merger, I believe, started in like 68, 69. So we were the first class to graduate from the new high school.
Okay, so you were part of that. Okay, I didn't know if you were just before that or actually the first class.
Yeah, the first class out of the new high school, which was pretty neat. Class of 72, myself and Larry Lambert.
Mm-hmm.
But it was fun growing up in Milan. It was a nice town. People treated you decent. When I was little, we had we grew produce for Stokely Van Camps out at our farm on Kelly Road. And I would go out and we would pick sweet corn and I would bring it back in the pickup truck and I would put it in a wheelbarrow. Mm-hmm. And I would go door to door as a little guy selling sweet corn to people mm-hmm. for 25 cents a dozen. And
wow.
They used to call the house looking for me, wanting to know where the sweet corn kid was, you know. So it was that was fun. And, you know, like I said, traveling around, everybody knew who I was, naturally. And mm-hmm. sometimes it wasn't because I was a good sweet corn selling kid, because I was a little mischief maker, but mm-hmm. that was all fun. I mean, nobody got in too much trouble, and everybody treated, you know, us pretty well. But before I went bald, I had blonde hair, mm-hmm. and there was no mistake in that little blonde-haired kid, because...
You were a real blonde?
Yeah,
blonde.
Okay. Real towhead.
Real towhead.
Yeah, but... They could pick me out of a crowd at night as being mm-hmm. the one that could have been the one that did a little mischief, but it was fun. Had a lot of good friends here. I still do. Mm-hmm. A lot of the fellows that I went to school with have stayed in this area.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, some have left naturally, but a lot of my close friends did stay in this area, and they've all raised children here. And I mean, I could sit here and tell you for hours of stories and stories. Some of them we couldn't put on tape, but but it was fun. And like I said, everybody treated everybody good.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we didn't have to worry at night. I mean, we could leave our bikes out in the yard or wherever. Doors are always unlocked, and it was a safe place to live. Back then, we, you know, the telephones were party lines,
mm-hmm.
you know.
And I remember that, too. I remember picking up the phone, you'd hear another conversation.
Yep.
And that's really far removed for some people now, because with the age of cell phones and other things we have, the fact that you had to share your phone line with someone else is strange.
Yeah, it was funny, because sometimes, you know, our neighbors would be on and we would pick up and they'd say, well, hi, how are you? You know, and they'd be talking to this person and to us. I don't think there's a nicer place around to be raised than to raise. And that's why I stayed here and raised my children here. And now they're raising their children here. So I have four grandchildren, and, you know, they're all in town here. Are just right outside of town. There's two in town and two right outside, but they knew what a good life it was, and I'm glad that they stayed here.
Mm-hmm.
And it's something that, you know, we've been able to appreciate.
You know, it's hard now, and it's unfortunate for a lot of communities, you know, given the economic climate, that, you know, for some people it's just, you just can't stay anymore.
Right.
And, you know, that's the thing I have found interesting, too, how so many people in this area that I've talked to have stayed, and their children have stayed, and I wonder, you know, 10 years down the road or 20 years, how different the conversations might be
right.
about this. But you know, I as I go through some of the pictures too in the local history department, see some things have changed, some things have not, and tell me a little bit about what you would do around the square, because was the Dairy Bar, how long did, was it the Dairy Bar, or did you go to the Invention for, I know Larry talked about there was, he would get his sodas at the Invention, or at the time it actually wasn't called the Invention, was it?
It was a corner cupboard.
Corner cupboard, okay,
yep.
That's right.
Yeah, and the Dairy Bar when it was there. That's where Crosby's Antiques is now.
Okay.
But that was a good little place to go. Between the two restaurants, you know, it was you could go in and get a real fountain drink, you know, like a cherry Coke or a chocolate Coke or whatever, and it was. And the people that ran them were, you know, naturally were local people, and they all knew when the kids were coming in, and that was a good time. I can remember having many a lunch and breakfast in there, and like I said, with my father on Saturday, it was, we always went out to the farm and helped my uncle. He was the real farmer, where my dad worked in a factory, and then back uptown we'd go for lunch, and the open face roast beef sandwiches with mashed potatoes and gravy, and or a hot dog off the little hot dog wheel that was in there that was cooking them. But it was good restaurants.
Tell me about something. Did you, as of course you would have been, you know, a young teenager then, do you remember the races, the hill races?
Oh yeah.
We have one picture or two pictures of the hill races. One is not as clear, but it's still not real close up. And I know that they were a part of what people used to enjoy watching. Can you tell me a little bit about the hill races? Do you remember, or would you remember?
Oh yeah. Yeah. That was the big thing for the Mellon Festival, because they brought some of the sports cars that they brought in were just really nice. And I'm sure if you've talked to anybody, how they used to went up the hill and turned and went back down, and then they went across the old iron bridge that was down there. It was over the river before it got washed out in 69. But it was Larry Smith, who naturally is Smitty. He tells stories about how they used to have to go up and mow the hillside over there back when it was the old sled hill called the Soup Bowl. And they used to have that all mowed off nice so people could sit. And that, I can remember that hillside just being solid with people on blankets watching these cars go up and down. And in 1967, my brother got a brand new Camaro with a 4-speed in it, and he ran his car in the hill climb. And it was kind of neat to see him. The only bad part is that they had applied some what they call tar and chip. If you're familiar with that, it's where they put asphalt down and put stone over top of it. Okay. They had some of that down towards the bottom, and as the cars went through it was a warm day, and that threw up tar on these cars, and it made a mess of some of these cars, and these people got pretty upset. But that was only the one time, but it was a fun time to watch. And I mean, the people that came in were just, it was unbelievable. Like I said, some of the cars, I mean, Shelby, if you're not familiar with cars, it was Shelby AC Cobra was a car today that would bring about $185,000 to $200,000 as a collector's car. But those were the kinds of cars that they were racing up and down the hills, and MGs and Sprites and Triumphs. And
oh, see, that's amazing. What a neat thing to hear about, because, you know, some of these things, well, through safety reasons, or of course part of it was, it I believe because of the flood is the reason it stopped, but and I'm sure later it would have been safety reasons. But to hear some of these interesting events that went on, especially at local festivals, it's always kind of intriguing.
Back when that road actually, you know, was the old Route 299, when the bridge was there, and that was without, you know, it's too bad that nobody took any like Super 8 movies or that, because that would be something to show today and put on a disc. But it was fun. The Mellon Festival, you know, and that's been the big thing too, that ever since I was a kid, we always looked forward to that. I know some of the people now get a little cranky because it's a lot of people in town and there's some litter and stuff, but you couldn't ask for a nicer hometown festival. I mean, people remark when you tell them that you're from Milan, the first thing they'll say is that the Mellon Festival, you know, they'll say that before they remember that Thomas Edison was here. But it is, it's like I said, that's a big part, you know, remembering that when I was a kid.
You remember, speaking of the 1969 flood, You remember, was your, I can't recall now, was your dad mayor then at the time?
Yeah.
Okay. Do you remember the gas explosion that happened at the Old Ledger gas explosion?
Yeah, we were happened to be down, we were down at the river. The river had started to go down some, and so we were down there, as young boys would be. Mm-hmm. The water was still high, but it wasn't running hard. Mm-hmm. And we were riding our bicycles naturally on the road when it was about, it was a couple of feet deep, but it wasn't running hard. So, you know, we had no chance of us getting hurt. But then all of a sudden we thought it was a clap of thunder. It was so loud. And then we heard the fire siren go off. Well, being the way we were, we raced uptown as quick as we could. And we happened to get right into the park as the Day family was crawling out of the rubble. But it was just unbelievable. It was, you would have never thought anybody could have survived it, but they crawled down from the second story. The floor was sloped towards Church Street, mm-hmm. and out they came, and they were very lucky. Mm-hmm. And what had happened, to the best of my knowledge, is that there, back then, they didn't have pilot lights that went out, you know, with a thermocoupler. So mm-hmm. what had happened is that the basement had filled with gas, and somehow they went down to light the pilot. And when it was a young guy down there, I don't think it was the son. I think it was a son that, or a child that they were watching, young man, and he didn't get hurt either. I was surprised, but they, other than maybe some scratches and that, to the best of my knowledge, I don't think he got hurt too bad. But then there was another explosion on Main Street. Blew the side of a house right out. It made it look like a dollhouse. The one whole side of the house just dropped right out from a gas explosion. Those people got burned pretty bad, though. But, yeah, that was a big thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, it's interesting, and I've asked others who I've interviewed about that because, you know, I remember I was little at the time of the 69 flood, but we were in this area, and we actually had to be rescued by boat because we had a cottage in Franklin Flats, and I can remember... Vaguely, I can remember the boat coming up to the window, but being so young at the time, I think my mom really downplayed it to not make me fearful of what was going on. Mm-hmm. But I can remember watching cars and trailers smash, and it was pretty bad.
Yeah.
I actually remember when the rain started. That's odd that sticks in my mind. Another big storm that we had here, and I wonder at the time... 1978, blizzard of 78.
Yeah.
Some of the people who participated in this project have shared stories about how things just kind of stopped and how the Eastmans lived out in Norwalk, so they couldn't get in to open up the store, but others came and opened up the store to make sure people could get goods. And then they also shared an interesting story about the Lawson's truck that was stranded on the turnpike and how Don Day and some others went up there to get the milk and brought it back.
Yeah.
Can you share any stories that you remember involving your dad or any?
Well, he happened to, he was retired then, and he was in Florida, and I used to take care of the farm where he lived on Kelly Road, and I happened to be stranded out there with a couple of my friends, and I unfortunately had a broken leg, and there I was, and all the electric service got pulled off the side of the house, so we had no power, but thank goodness there was a generator in the basement, and we were able to keep heat and everything. And a friend of mine happened to have a four-wheel drive truck, and he was getting milk from the Lawson's truck and taking it to people that he could get to around the area. So he helped distribute it, which was very nice. Mm-hmm. But it was unbelievable. It was, you know, it was so warm and kind of almost balmy the day before, and then that night, and then all of a sudden, boy, everything changed.
Yeah, I had read that they said that actually the strength of the winds were like hurricane force winds, that it wasn't a lot of snow, but it was the strength of the winds that came through. And I remember that as well, because we were without power. I don't think as long as some people, but interesting stories about that happened that you learn about how communities react and people to these big natural disasters.
It was nice because, you know, people did. They pulled together to make sure that people were taken care of. They checked on people. Fellows with snowmobiles were making sure that families were safe. Like I said, a friend of mine had a four-wheel drive, and he was. We had some friends in the area, and he made sure they were all okay, and if they needed anything, like I said, they ran milk and cottage cheese and everything from the Lawson's truck, and there was also some Nichols bread trucks around that they were distributing. CertainTeed had like a small distribution area going on mm-hmm. where you could go get stuff and take it for yourself or try to get it to people, but it was good to see people pull together, mm-hmm. and that's what's nice about this area.
It is interesting. I didn't realize that CertainTeed had a small distribution center for that.
Well, it was actually just what they had done is that they'd taken their break room and made it a makeshift area for, you know, to let people come in and get stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I think it's hard, too, when you think about it. Because normally when we have storms, you know, it may be 6 hours, 8 hours that, you mm-hmm. know, you're not really out in a storm. But to have a disaster of that magnitude, it's hard for people to, I think, realize just how bad it was because we don't have them that long. But it did shut things down for a long time. Yeah. Of course, before cell phones too, when you're out of power and you're out without your cell phone, and you know, or of course you didn't have them then, but it's just interesting how people respond.
Yeah, yeah, it was. It showed the real character of people, mm-hmm. which was nice. So hopefully we don't have another one like that one. So,
tell me, Steve, about what you presently do. A little bit about your position again.
Well, I work as a lineman, electrician for the Village of Milan, but actually I work for all the departments. Mm-hmm. Now, with being a small community like this, we kind of cross-train and do a little bit of everything. Also, being a township trustee, that's been a pretty rewarding job, too. I've been that for since 96. But it is, you know, I don't know if it's because of my father and all he did for the community that I don't know if I kind of jumped right into it too. And mm-hmm. My sister teaches school, has taught here for 30, I think she's retiring this year with 38 years.
Who's your sister?
Connie Smith.
Okay.
So, you know, she's been a big part of the community too here. And my older brother, he served on council for a while and worked for the police department here, and he worked at Tenecol. But it's a good job. Like I said, we do just about everything. I can do anything from plow snow to work water lines to work on high voltage lines. But you keep busy.
Mm-hmm. Now, explain how it works, because your power, the power that Milan gets, is how does that work?
It's purchased through the AMP Ohio program, which is American Municipal Power of Ohio.
Okay.
And it's a group of communities. There's quite a few of them now. And the power is brought in through Edison Transmission Lines, but it's purchased through them. And then we have our own distribution system.
Okay.
I believe right now we have around 800 customers.
Okay, because I am, you know, somewhat familiar with how that works, but I know that things are changing, and of course, as energy policies change too, I imagine things will be different. Especially with the talk about the new energy that's coming, or new ideas on that
green power and all that.
Green power, yeah, and the wind turbines that they're looking at. I heard something on the radio about manufacturing. Because, you know, we've lost, of course, a lot of manufacturing in this area, but now there's a real opportunity, I guess, to start manufacturing for some of these new, the green energy mm-hmm. solutions, even wind turbines, different things are starting to spring up. So I thought that was interesting to hear.
I know that there are some member communities that do have, I know Bowling Green, they're they've put up some wind turbines, and then there's supposed to be some going up out here in Oxford Township, from what I heard.
That's what I've heard, too. I'm wondering, do you see Milan ever maybe jumping on something like that, out in, or at least within the township? Because I know...
I don't think the village itself would participate in it because it's such an expensive, you know, to build a wind turbine. It's a pretty expensive process. And right now, with the kind of the slump that we're going through with industry, right now there's not such a big demand.
Mm-hmm.
If we would have been going like we were, if everything could have kept going like it was from, you know, like 2003-04 in that area, there might have been some real need. But right now you've got such a glut of natural gas too,
mm-hmm.
that I don't know how much green power really go. So, but hopefully they continue to develop it, and you know, everybody will participate in it somewhere down the line.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of, you know, having mentioned the township, what kinds of things that you are going on in the township where you see changing? Because there has been, you know, I know, of course, development, land development has kind of been, with the housing market, has
right.
kind of been stalled. Do you see anything upcoming for the township, perhaps? Or is a lot dependent on the economy?
It's pretty much dictated by what the economy does. I don't know what everybody's feelings are about the gambling bills that they've passed. There's so many pros and cons.
Mm-hmm.
The only plus that, you know, there could be a chance that maybe a nice hotel casino type would go in this area.
Mm-hmm.
I would hope that something would go in Milan Township so that we could, you know, make some jobs for our kids around here.
Mm-hmm.
But right now it's just, I don't think there's really, from what I know of, there's not really a lot planned for Milan Township itself. I was so hoping that Kalahari would come this way, mm-hmm. because of the turnpike, but they chose here in Township.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe in the near future or within the distant future, there'll be more development in the Avery area.
That's what I was wondering, because there's certainly, you know, I look at the area by Hobie as well, you know, when that outlet mall never really took out, you know, off, or it did for a while and then it kind of died out. But it just seems that there are some prime opportunities being so close to the turnpike,
yeah.
and not very far away from the lake, that things could develop here. So...
Well, we're hoping that something will come in, and like I said, just as long as, you know, they can bring some good quality jobs to mm-hmm. this area, that's what my goal is to get some good jobs, because I think we all know that you can't make it on a minimum wage,
mm-hmm.
and that's unfortunately that's what a lot of places are paying.
And you know, it's interesting. You know, kind of as my role here, I've been looking at, you know, the post-World War II boom and certain times in our economy here when, you know, especially in the Milan area, certain, and here on, you look at surrounding communities, when these communities kind of started, you saw these developments go in Milan Manor here, and then Beechwood Cove and some places in Huron. And, you know, a lot of it, we've certainly tied to, you know, General Motors and NASA and some of the other industry that was here, the good paying jobs.
Right.
So you see that correlation, and hopefully again, you know, we'll see something down the road. Is there anything else, Steve? You've shared some interesting stories that you would like to share. You know, I know you said there's some that you can share, but it's been interesting to hear what you have to say, because living here this whole time, you know a lot of people, and, you know, you've been a part of this community. And you said you've raised, well, you have a son and two daughters and,
yes.
and grandchildren now.
Four grandchildren.
Yeah. Anything else you think you'd like to add about this community or growing up, something that, a fond memory or something you can, that sticks out?
Just the people. I just think that, you know, they're really quality people. I mean, you know, there's not really one single thing that I can really pick out. It's just that it's been a really a nice, I've had a nice life. Mm-hmm. You know, there's been a few bumps in the road, naturally. That's just normal for anybody. But mm-hmm. Overall, Milan is just a nice place, and I can't say enough about it. I'm just glad that I was raised here, because so many people that have grown up in, you know, maybe the city, or, you know, they've never had an opportunity to experience a good life. Mm-hmm. And that's what I consider my life to be. It's a good life, and the people around me are great people. Once in a while, you might find somebody that's just not, you know, kosher with the rest, but that's life itself. Mm-hmm. You know, that's what makes a good mix. But overall, Milan itself is just quality people, and I think if there was ever anybody was in need, I think that the community would really get behind and help them. I mean, I've seen it happen already. I mean, mm-hmm. the fundraisers that they've done for people that have had some health issues, and the turnout's just unbelievable. I mean, and that's what makes a community.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate this interview, Steve, and thank you for sharing your stories with us.
Okay. Well, it was great. I appreciate it, too.
Thank you.